Welcome. You're listening to the Board Games and Beer Podcast. Welcome to the Board Games and Beer Podcast, Episode 7. We have a special interview this evening with Teal Fristo from Nothing Sacred Games, and I am also joined by my co-host Morgan. Welcome, both of you. How are you both doing this evening?
Hi, it's great to be here. I'm doing quite good.
And how about you, Morgan?
Hey, I'm great. Glad to have you on the show, Teal.
Thanks for having me here.
Teal, you're currently running a Kickstarter for a game called Shadow Throne. It's doing very well. Looks like you're almost at $9,000 out of the 12.5 goal as we speak tonight, with about 11 days left. Would you like to give our listeners a brief rundown of the game in case they haven't really heard about it or clicked on the page yet?
Sure, yeah. So Shadow Throne is a card drafting game of Machiavellian intrigue. Basically, the story behind it is you've got three different factions that are fighting this war, but the players are members of a secret society, and they're not on any particular side. So they're basically manipulating these different sides for personal benefit. They're trying to get the most influence as the war goes on. So as far as how the game works, it's basically a series of hands, and each hand represents a battle in the war that's going on. And it starts off with players drafting cards, which is them sort of taking control over these different characters. And after that, the players get to play cards to determine which of the three sides wins that particular battle that's being fought. And then players who've played cards of the winning side get to collect points. It's really quick, really really easy to pick up. And you just kind of do that until somebody has earned enough influence, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's a pretty quick play game. So what are you talking about time-wise here? Like, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, under an hour? Or?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely under an hour. Usually around 30 minutes. Sometimes it can be a little bit longer than that. Mm-hmm. The game usually lasts about four hands, mm-hmm. and each hand is almost always under 10 minutes. So, it's pretty quick.
Right.
Once you get used to it, it goes really fast. You can play several games in the night easy. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a lot of games now, in my opinion, are kind of going into this under an hour stuff, which used to be not really appealing to me, but now I'm really getting drawn to that kind of game where it's fast to pick it up and play because. Sitting there going through a bunch of rules. I don't mind those kind of games sometimes, but it just seems for most people, I think it's much more appealing to them. For a whole wide range of gamers. I mean, people that are really into it, but people that aren't into that kind of stuff, they tend to like those faster play games. So,
yeah, that's been my experience as well. And in fact, the last game that I made was a game called Corporate America, and that game had like a 90 minute expected length, mm-hmm, and I just found that was too long for a lot of people. It mm-hmm. was too long for people to play test. It was too long to get people to try it at conventions and that sort of thing. And then when you see that on the box, it's intimidating for a lot of people.
Right.
So yeah, I've definitely been trying to scale back and make the games quicker and easy to fit in between other games or be able to play multiple times in a night or whatever.
Right.
There's a lot more flexibility there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess the next question I got to kind of ask you is what was the inspiration behind Shadow Throne? How did it come to be? What kind of got the ball rolling for that, for the idea for this game?
Yeah. So there were kind of a few different inspirations, I guess. So thematically, it was definitely I was kind of right in the middle of reading the Game of Thrones series, and that was going through my mind the whole time.
Right.
That was definitely a big inspiration for the sort of theme behind the game, the story, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanically, there are kind of two main inspirations. So the first is drafting games, probably the most famous of which is Seven Wonders. I'm a pretty big fan of that mechanic, and I've thought a lot about it, and I've experimented a lot with designing games using it. But I'm always interested in sort of like exploring mechanics and seeing how you can twist a common and fun one in a new way. And so that was one of the things that I was trying to do with this game, was take a solid mechanic but sort of showcase it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other kind of big inspiration mechanically was Citadels, kind of a classic game intrigue. It features drafting, but you know, I really like that game. But I felt like it was once you sort of learn the game, it can take a really long time because everybody has to think of so many different possibilities. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in sort of creating a game that creates that sort of feeling, that sort of experience that players have, but plays a little more quickly. Mm-hmm. Everybody's always doing stuff, so.
Right. Cool.
So as you've kind of grown up as a gamer and as you've been designing both in corporate America and for Shadow Thrones, do you have any games or designers in particular that have really influenced you? I know you said this one kind of drew a bit, you know, Citadels and Seven Wonders. But is there anything that's really kind of an overarching theme for you?
That's a good question. So I guess if I was to pick a designer, it would probably be Richard Garfield, which would probably be a lot of, aspiring designers' choices. The designer of Magic and also like King of Tokyo and many other Netrunner, Android Netrunners is the most recent big one. I think that he... he definitely influenced a lot of people because Magic has been so influential. And also, you know, I know this happened to me, and I have a feeling it happens to a lot of designers. You kind of start out by just, like, tweaking existing games, and Magic is kind of like the perfect game for that. It's constantly being tweaked, and it's designed to have just nearly unlimited possibilities. So definitely coming from that background. The other thing is, I guess if I was to sort of talk about my... what I'm trying to accomplish as a designer, definitely a lot of personal interaction. So I want to make sure that all my games have a lot of interaction with the other players. And you couldn't really play them with, like, a computer, or you couldn't play them by yourself. So I want to make sure that everybody's decisions have a big impact on the game. And for corporate America, that came through in a lot of negotiation. So the game is almost all negotiating deals with other players. And in Shadow Throne, a lot of it is you're trying to anticipate what other players are going to play and sort of, stay one step ahead of them. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of an advantage if you can think about the characters that the other players are going to play and then play the counters to those.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a big goal of mine. So I also do digital games.
Mm-hmm.
I've done flash games, and I'm just about to release a mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, you can do a lot of really cool stuff, but one of the challenges is doing multiplayer and that kind of thing. And so it's really easy to do multiplayer with card games and board games. And so that's really what I focus on when I'm trying to do an interesting new board game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I've got to ask, since you're kind of a digital game designer, any plans or hints at a Shadow Throne app in the future?
That's a good question. I don't have any exact plans. However, the game definitely could work as an app, or at least as, you know, there's a number of different websites out there that are set up to run board games. One that comes to mind is Board Game Arena. The game very much could work as something like that, because while you can get a lot of sort of like talking, table talk and that kind of thing, you don't need it at all to make the game work. No plans, but definitely a possibility. We'll kind of see where things go.
So just looking at the art style of Shadow Throne, it really draws you into the game. It's very gritty and very dramatic. Uh-huh. Can you share a little bit about the art process you kind of went through and what kind of inspired whatever kind of gave you the idea for the artwork for the game?
Well, I wish I could claim the art as my own, but alas, I don't quite have that skill. I am working with a couple of great artists. The graphic designer is the same guy who helped me out a lot for Corporate America. He goes by Slim Mittens, and he's a good friend who lives in the Bay Area here with me.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing a lot of the work on the graphic design, title treatment, all that kind of stuff. The card card templates, mm-hmm. just these beautiful banners. He's the one who's been doing that stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he also introduced me to Jesse Perotti, who is the illustrator for the game. And he's mm-hmm. the one who's done this like really gritty, really atmospheric mm-hmm. art mm-hmm. for the different characters, which really just, you know, it brings the game to life. And I mean, it's amazing how much good art will sort of draw people in and get mm-hmm. their imaginations mm-hmm. going. And the, you know, from the beginning, the game has been sort of gritty. It's Machiavellian. It is, you know, the players are supposed to be kind of ruthless. They're supposed to not really care about these people that they're messing with. And mm-hmm. I think that the art style, which is very dark, it's very sort of jagged lines, and it almost looks like an old pulp novel or an old graphic novel or something like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It really brings that sort of feeling to the forefront and kind of gets people in that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
As far as how he came up with it, you know, I just he knew that how the game worked. We talked a lot about sort of the setting that we were going for, and then he sort of just started experimenting with different styles and mm-hmm. Just kind of came up with this one on his own. He's a very talented artist and mm-hmm. can do all sorts of different stuff. So I'm mm-hmm. really glad that he came up with something that's so stylistic and gripping.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it was interesting when you hear about. When you're designing games and stuff, that this component seems to be such a big thing as the artwork. I mean, it certainly draws me in, and that how much really good game designers really pay attention to that, and that's kind of the thing that tips you know, over, because it's just that eye candy or whatever, you know. And if the game's even, you know, is really good on top of it, boy, I mean, you just kind of nail the thing that way, don't you?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've learned from doing these Kickstarters and getting the word out about games, trying to tell people about games, is that it's really hard to tell people about how a game plays.
Mm-hmm,
certainly through text, even through video. Mm-hmm. It's really hard because a game is a dynamic system, and
right.
it's something that you experience yourself, and it's really hard to sort of get that experience across.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, you provide... some atmospheric art, something to show you kind of what you're going to be feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a really great way of capturing people's attention and mm-hmm. communicating really concisely kind of what people are going to be getting themselves into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like the little magic hook that I don't think a lot of people really think about, you know, because I know for me, when I'm looking at something, mm-hmm. that's, like you said, it's true that you don't know how the game's played. You can't really get a grasp of that. But, man, if you've got great artwork and you focus on that, that's going to draw mm-hmm. immediately draw your people in, and then they're going to look at it and go, oh, this looks cool, and then you've already piqued the interest. So it seems to me that's the really good Kickstarters, that's what they're focusing on, you know, and that seems to be the hook that pulls everybody in.
Yeah, I definitely think that's essential. I think it's, you know, it's something that, from my perspective as a designer, I definitely come from a very mechanical, the mechanical side of things. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of been the most important thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But realizing how important the other side is, mm-hmm. the artistic side and the feeling side, mm-hmm. That's been a very valuable lesson that I've been sort of learning mm-hmm. over the past several years as I've been doing this more and more seriously.
Right. And I think it sets like the atmosphere up, like you mentioned that or whatever. And I think that's such a key thing, because I think a lot of people play the games not only because they're fun, but I think a lot of us, you know, myself included, it's this escape, you know, that you're looking for, mm-hmm. this step into something different. I get to pretend to be something, or whatever is the draw. The imaginative process, you know, is mm-hmm. what hooks you into the game. So, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, ultimately the mechanics should be creating something like that for the players anyway. So if you are able to align the art style and the mechanics, well, then the art is doing a good job of explaining what the game is going to be like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. So. Cool. Great.
So speaking of mechanics and kind of twisting the conversation over to the side here, I kind of want to talk about that $20,000 stretch goal.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
super excited for the as yet unnamed expansion to potentially see light. The potential to kind of mash up these factions that are fighting for control of the throne and have a different game every time is really exciting to me. 10 days out, 11 days out, I haven't checked the kick track to see where you're trending. So, first of all, talk to me a little bit about that expansion. And second of all, is that something that's going to be available for purchase later? I know it's going to be an add-on when we hit the 20,000 in the campaign, but is that something that, you know, potentially later in a store someone can pick up Shadow Throne and then a week later go, I need more of this, and pick up insert expansion name here?
Well, you know, so I can't say for sure what the expansion name is going to be called, but it's looking like it'll probably be Shifting Shadows. So we can go with that for now. So I guess first I'll talk about what the expansion is and sort of like where it comes from. And then I'll kind of get into the future of the expansion and what will happen with the Kickstarter and everything. So first of all, the game was actually designed right from the get-go to be modular. So the idea here was that you'd be able to easily switch out different factions to have a different experience every time. And in fact, I sort of came up with this game idea over a long weekend when I was out camping with some friends. And as we were driving to different locations, I was, jotting down all these notes. And I think I jotted down, like, I don't know, 9 different factions or something like that. So I had all these different ideas for possible directions to take it. Mm-hmm. And so very early on, I envisioned this game being something like a little bit like Dominion or like Smash Up, where it would be really easy to customize each experience to make it a little bit different. And so I've actually been testing the three factions that are planned for this expansion from the beginning, not nearly as much as the three factions that come with the base game, but they've been sort of in rotation the whole time. And those factions are so the base game has the Empire, the Rebels, and the Church, and then the expansion has the Cultists, the Merchants, and the Order, with the Order kind of being like a little like mini secret society type thing. Mm-hmm. They have very different mechanics from the base game factions, and in a lot of ways they kind of up the craziness level of the game and sort of take what the base game expansions or the base game factions are doing and then just, like, you know, take it up to 11 or whatever. I'm really excited about the expansion too. I really hope we hit that stretch goal because I think it would be a lot of fun to get those out. So what is the future of the expansion? Well, if we don't hit that stretch goal, I'm not going to have the money to print the expansion. So I'm not sure about the future or the fate of the expansion at that point. However, the kind of nice thing is, even if we don't hit that stretch goal, which I'm not going to say that we're not going to do it, but we got a ways to go. So we'll see. I'm not banking on it happening. But it would be something that I would consider doing in the future as an additional Kickstarter to try to get that money to actually print it. It's much less expensive than printing the base game, but it's still, you know, anytime you're printing one of these things, it's not cheap to do. So I've definitely been learning how to make it more and more cheap as I've been actually doing it, but. It's tough to get those prices down. So it is definitely something that I would consider doing probably early next year. I probably wouldn't do the Kickstarter until the base game was actually released and in people's hands, so more people would be aware of it, and then more people would be actually starting to play it with their friends and stuff. One of the sort of tricky things with expansions is you gotta make sure that there's people out there that actually want it, that that are willing to buy it and are interested in it. And the total population that could do that is limited by who has the base game. I want to make sure that people have the base game and they like the base game before I take another plunge like this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll see. I'm still hoping that that stretch goal gets hit. It would be really awesome. I do think that the expansion really adds a lot to the game. So
That's really interesting, Teal. I mean, you kind of point that out because it seems to me, you know, a lot of games now, there's always expansions that go with everything. I mean, it's just some expansion, which I think is totally fine. You know, people want those sorts of things, but I think you made a great point there that you know, it doesn't make sense to maybe put one out there if you don't have a base that, you know, really wants to play it or really likes it enough or whatever it is. And I think sometimes some games, you know, it winds up that I think they're fine as it is in some cases, you know, and that the game's really solid. And sometimes they don't really need it. So it's just sort of funny. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a funny conundrum sometimes you get wound up in. But I think there's a great way to approach it by just saying, hey, I don't want to do that unless I've got the player base that really wants to play it, because it doesn't make any sense to make it in that sense.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think it's important to be realistic about that kind of thing. I think that, you know, expansions are exciting. And so, you know, a lot of designers want to do that. That's exciting. It's a sign of success and stuff, but it's important to realize that it's, you know, it comes with costs as well. So it's not like a free ride or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think a lot of people really think about that stuff sometimes, you know, they're like, oh, well, does it have an expansion? I want it to have an expansion, you know, and there's other factors that are involved in that sometimes. So yeah, cool.
Well, I can tell you, it turns out that after reading that backer update, if I shove money at the screen, Kickstarter doesn't know that I want to increase my pledge level, so.
I think they're working on that right now, actually.
Shh, you saw nothing.
Great. So, Teal, I just want to kind of ask you, so how has this Kickstarter campaign differed from your first Corporate America? I know you talked about it a little bit earlier here in the interview, but, you know, what's been kind of different about this one compared to that one?
So I think one of the biggest differences for me was, you know, when I was working on Corporate America, I thought it was going to be like a manageable game. I thought it was going to be a relatively small game, but I didn't really know a lot of the logistics of making board games. And so it ended up being a little bit bigger than I expected and a little bit more expensive than I expected. And the goal for that project was quite high. It was like $20,000 was the base goal for that game, and I just barely squeaked by. And so that taught me a lot that, you know, you really need to make these games manageable in scope, and make sure that they're not super expensive for customers to buy, and make sure that they're not super expensive to produce. So that's been one of the big goals for Shadow Throne, and really all the games that I've been working on since Corporate America, of which there are a few others. Just making sure that the game is small, the game is compact. You know, obviously, it's important to me that there's still a ton of gameplay, but you don't necessarily need, like, you know, four decks of cards like there are in Corporate America in order to have like a really engaging experience. So I think that's been one of the big differences, is that the scope of this game is much smaller. And that's actually one of the reasons. I mean, I think I'm probably following a pretty similar funding curve that I did for Corporate America in terms of how much money I've raised. But you can imagine now, for Shadow Throne, it's like almost 9,000 with a week and a half to go. Well, if it was almost 9,000 with a week and a half ago for Corporate America, you know, I still needed more than double what I had here, and that was really stressful.
Right.
I've tried to make it so this game is a little bit, the sights are a little bit lower, so you know, I don't have to go through that same mental anguish that I did during Corporate America.
Right. Yeah, so a learning experience, obviously, you know, from first one to this one, you know, and I imagine that's kind of the case, is you kind of get, you know, your feet wet in these things, you kind of learn what to do and what not to do, I suppose.
And the other thing is, you know, I have a little bit of a bigger base. I can reach more people this way, and I know a little bit better about how to communicate with people through the updates and that kind of thing, which I was really sort of figuring out as I went along for Corporate America. I mean, you always have to do that a little bit. You always have to experiment and that kind of thing. And so one of the examples for Shadow Throne that we talked about a little earlier is the I'm letting the backers come up with the name for the expansion and then vote on it, which has been a really fun thing. You know, people came up with some awesome ideas, and a lot of people have been engaged with it. So it's a fun way to get involved, you know. And that's one of the really cool things about Kickstarters, I think, is they give everybody a chance to sort of take ownership of the project.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the appeal for a lot of people too. You know, that stuff seems to do so well in many cases, is that, you know, like, oh, cool, I was part of this game, and, you know, I got to help in it or something, and that's always a cool thing, because then that comes to be a talking point sometimes when you're sitting around with people like, oh, by the way, you know, I helped with this thing, with this game, and it just kind of helps sells it with your friends, and, you know, then it can just expand from there. So it's kind of neat. It makes it more of a community-based sort of thing, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think the internet is really good for that. You know, it's really good for bringing people together who, you know, maybe geographically far apart, but are, you know, interest-wise very close and are excited about the same sort of things. Yeah, that's been a really fun experience. I mean, I think that's one of the most rewarding things, is meeting a lot of really cool people and sort of getting to know people all over the place.
Absolutely.
So our listeners are some pretty cool people, and I know that I'm very good at spending Vel's money.
Yes, she is.
So I guess my question for you is, how can our listeners help get you funded? Obviously, shoving money through the computer screen and backing the campaign is one way, but how else can they give you a hand?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, backing is great. Participating is also great, you know, leaving a comment, and of course sharing it with your friends. One actually big difference between Shadow Throne and Corporate America is, for Shadow Throne, I have a free print and play available for anybody who'd like it. So if you are really sort of on the fence about the game, or if you want to help the game out, you can print a copy out and give it a try. That's the best way to tell that the game is solid. You know, you're not going to get all of that great art with the print and play. But you'll get a great idea of how the game plays out. And then, you know, you're going to be showing your friends about it, too. So the more people that see it, the better. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. If you don't have a printer, or you don't have the patience to make a printed play, which, you know, I don't blame you. The game isn't huge, but it'll take, an hour or two of work to get that in work in order. Well, then you can also just share. There's some really great reviews out there of the game that show how the game plays and everything. You know, just post that to Facebook or Twitter or whatever your social network of choice is, and let your friends who are interested in that kind of thing know about it. Because I think that's actually one of the things that I'm still very much learning about, is how to get the word out, you know, how to get the game in front of people who would like the game. Because I really do think a lot of people would love it, but it's hard to reach those people. If you have a friend that you think would enjoy the game, just, you know, let them know about it. Send them a link, or send them a video, or play the print and play with them, or whatever. But just let them know that it's out there.
Right. So, yeah, so it's just essentially talking. You know, trying to spread the word and that kind of thing, which is what you're trying to do, obviously. So, yeah, great. Yeah. So, Teal, we have to ask you this. I don't know if you knew this was coming, but we always do the little throw you under the bus kind of thing. It's never mean. But, we are a board games and beer podcast. So I'm sure our listeners, myself included, will like to know, what beer goes with Shadow Throne? What's the choice?
Oh, man. So can I give you a brewery that would
that
go well with it?
Certainly
absolutely.
Works. Absolutely
okay.
Works. That absolutely works.
All right. So, you know, I mentioned this because my brother is actually a brewer.
Cool.
Yeah, he is working for a up-and-coming brewery in Spokane, Washington called No Lie. They are not widely distributed at this point, but they have some excellent beers. I would highly recommend basically any of their any of their line. If I had to choose, it would probably be an IPA, but I think that they've got plenty of other good stuff too.
That would be my
answer to that one.
Cool. See, you didn't even think about it. We get people on here all the time, they say they're not beer experts, and they just rattle something off immediately without any thought. So You know, we're all much better at this than we imagine. See.
Yeah. Well, I usually defer to my brother. So yeah. I'll.
Yeah. There you go. Safety net. It's always good thing. Yeah. It's not supposed to be painful, though. I mean, it's just, you know, we're just talking about beer. I mean, something you drink. It's makes you feel good. It tastes good usually if you like it. You know.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's not supposed to be like painful, like you're drinking rat poison or something. Like, well, what rat poison goes with my game? Well, you see. It's not like that.
The kind that goes unnoticed into someone else's drink. It's Shadow Throne, after all.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
That's not a bad one.
That's awesome.
All right.
I think you're going to be really good at this game.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I don't know if I want to play with her.
Oh, we have to play.
You just got to wait for the digital version. So make sure that there's a little bit of distance.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can run. Drop the iPad.
I was physically going to carry the knife.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was going to hire somebody to carry it for me.
Ooh, even more devious.
Yeah. All right, Teal, I've had a great time talking to you today. I'm sure Vel has as well. How can our listeners reach you? How can they get a hold of you, see more about your games?
Feel free to check out my website. That is nothingsacredgames.com. I blog semi-regularly. I used to blog a little more regularly. I talk about design. I talk about the projects I'm working on. I talk about sort of the business side of things. And, you know, I'm really happy to talk to people about any of those things, answer questions, start conversations. So, you know, feel free to check out the website, nothingsacredgames.com. Mm-hmm. I'm also active on Twitter and Facebook, so you can look up Nothing Sacred Games on Facebook, or the Twitter handle is Nothing Sacred G. Couldn't quite fit the whole games in there, mm-hmm. So you can reach me through that as well. And then if you happen to be in the Bay Area, I'm a semi-regular at Endgame in Oakland, and I make appearances at It's Your Move in Oakland and Games of Berkeley. And, you know, I'm always happy to, you know, meet up with people and play games. So, yeah, feel free to reach out to me.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great. So is there anything else that you'd you feel like you'd want to share with us or whatever?
Nothing in particular. I just, like to really thank you guys for having me. It's been a great conversation. It's been a great time talking to you guys. So thank you.
Okay. Well, it's great having you on the show. And like I said, let's give Teal a hand here and push this thing through. We want to get this game into people's hands because it sounds fun. And you're missing out if you don't. So if you haven't got on and funded this thing, get out and fund this. We want to see this game go through because I want to play it. I want it in my hands. And I know Morgan does too.
I needed this game yesterday. Like I said on Twitter, you had me at Machiavellian.
Yep, easy sell. It was an easy sell. Awesome. So anyway, I really want to... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I'm just thanking you again.
Yep, and I really appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule and whatever to give a little bit of time to talk to us about your game, and we really, really enjoyed it. So anyway, anything else, Morgan? Before we kind of roll on out of here? Okay. Well, anyway, we will be talking to people on our next episode of the Board Games and Beer Podcast. And once again, I really want to welcome Teal for joining us from Nothing Sacred Games to talk about Shadow Throne. Anyway, good night, everybody.